Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. Welcome back to the show, Bob.
Yeah, hi, Jim. Good to be with you and good to be with our listeners out there.
And we have several questions today from our listeners. We have two questions from Ken in Lexington, Kentucky, my old Kentucky home.
Yeah.
Jim and Bob, we enjoy your weekly comments, greatly appreciate your insights. Can you help me with a couple of questions? First, with the $2 trillion encompassed in the U.S. Inflation Reduction Act and the CHIPS Act yet to be spent, does this massive spending in essence constitute a financial put for stock markets that will keep them buoyant for the foreseeable future?
Yeah, that's a good question. Whether the money gets out there or not, we don't know yet. But one of the things we do know is that in March, the U.S. yield curve inverted, and inversion is always followed by a recession. Now, the GDP number for the third quarter came out, and it was up, 5.2% or something like that, so it was strong. And I think that had much to do with people trying to get back from normal after the COVID shutdown. And if people are back to normal, and you've got this sell signal, let's call it a sell signal on the economy, I think everything's going to be vulnerable and will be discovered over the next few months. I think we're in generally a choppy S&P market, but underneath it, they're starting to pull the rug out. And then the next part of the question?
Next question. Assuming your prognosis that long-term interest rates will rise in a post-bubble contraction, can you give us an idea as to when investors should switch from short-term investments, example treasury bills, and begin investing in long-term instruments, 10 and 20-year bonds?
Yeah, the long end of the treasuries are going to be for trading. But if you can get in touch with a competent bond dealer, one could find some good grade corporates, but only 3 to 4 year maturities, and you're going to get a hell of a lot better yield than in short-term deposits, which are going to go back to zero again. And you can get a better current yield on a package of, as I said, good grade corporates, and with not a huge amount of risk. And at the end, if you go for 4 years, they get redeemed at par. So I kind of like it, but you have to get in touch with a bond dealer, a competent bond dealer who can, where you can build a position like that. But otherwise, gold should be, one should have some gold stocks. But to try and trade the long bond, it's for traders, not investors. So.
Bob, yeah, I've noticed now they're. I'm watching financial television. They're saying, oh, maybe you should hold gold now, and gold miners and gold shares, gold, which was just horrible. It was just a shiny rock for so long. Now people are talking gold. Why is that?
Well, I don't know how extensive your survey is, but if you take a look at a representative of the sector, the TSE Venture Exchange, it's totally crapped out. A whole lot of junior stocks have become orphaned, but it looks like it's bottoming. So we're very bullish on gold stocks from biggies right down to juniors.
From our good friend Kathleen, I haven't opened the email yet, but I'm sure there will be a musical reference in it because she loves to mix music and money. Hello, Jim and Bob. Happy holidays. Speaking of holidays, the U.S. and Canadian consumer have been on an extended holiday the past 2 years, spending money like there's no tomorrow. This reminds me of the song Let the Good Times Roll, made popular by Ray Charles. The lyrics, don't sit there mumbling, talking trash. If you want to have a ball, you got to go out and spend some cash. Let the good times roll. Let the good times roll.
Yeah.
One has to think that a monumental credit catastrophe is on the horizon. Bob, what happens next? Rampant inflation, deflationary collapse, or never-ending stagflation?
The middle one's right, deflationary contraction. And I got a couple of songs for you. From the 1930s. Well, for everybody who's listening, one is these things are show the dreadfulness of the times, and one of them is "Brother, Can You Spare a Dime" by Bing Crosby. About a 1931 or 32 recording of that one, and it really gets through about how hard the Depression was. And then there's another one by Ruth Etting, who was a very popular singer in the early 30s. And it's called 10 Cents a Dance, where the only work she can find is at a dance club. And she gets paid 10 cents a dance, and part of the lines include this guy, big guy stepping on her toes and everything else. But those are two songs that epitomize the down part of the Depression.
Why would you say a deflationary contraction is on the way?
Well, here's the way it goes, Jim. You have a great global boom in commodities. That was 2008, and that was tested with a secondary rally in 2011. And then a decade later, you have a great financial bubble. And after the financial bubble is over, and there has been five previous ones, they've been followed by a depression that lasts for about 20 years. A deflationary contraction.
So we're going to have a 20-year depression?
Well, the business cycle will still be there, you know, the 3 to 4 year business cycle, but the recoveries will be weak, and the down parts will be unrelenting sort of stuff, yeah. Yeah, for example, though, in England, in the stock bubble was 1873, and the editor of The Economist then, highly esteemed Walter Bagehot, he published that nothing could go wrong because you had the Bank of England and it would provide liquidity and then nothing would go wrong. So you got into the usual 20-year depression. And I think it was about 1880, senior economists in England started to call it, in quotes, the Great Depression. And it lasted till 1895. And then the next time around, as I said, you had the bubble that completed in 1920, and then you had a multi-year post-bubble contraction. So it's going to be interesting to see how this works out.
Question from Michael. Hi, Bob and Jim. The markets have had an incredible rally in November. Is there enough irrational exuberance left to carry these markets higher into January?
Oh, yeah. The markets had a few whacks, and yeah, I have a figure that you can get into maybe a slightly positive trading range out into the new year, but I wouldn't look to any extended rise. I mean, we've completed a fabulous bubble.
Another question from Michael. Should one now begin to accumulate short positions in the Russell 2000 and in emerging markets since these markets fall first?
Well, there's a, I was just talking to Ross the other day about problem about the Russell 2000. Is that what were small caps? It's supposed to be a small cap index, but the these companies have grown up to be no longer small caps. You got the same problem in GDXJ, the Toronto Gold Index. XJ meant juniors. You got Kinross in there now. I mean, so it's not a small cap index anymore, nor is the GDXJ. So I don't know. I'd find something else to play the short side. And as far as shorting emerging markets, go ahead, find your vehicle. But I can't specifically identify any particular way of doing it. Yeah. So.
And a third question for Michael. Assuming we have a market sell-off in early 2024, what might happen to the gold miners and commodity producers relative to the overall stock market this time around, given the current level of inflation?
Yeah, we've got to take this one. In previous post-bubble contractions, the deflation takes the price of most things down relative to the bullion price. So I've been using gold divided by the CRB, CRB representing costs. And, of course, if you take gold divided by crude oil, then, you know, in any mine, energy costs are about 60%. So we'll watch that. And the gold divided by commodities and gold divided by crude oil, they've been correcting a while ago, but they have made the bottom and are on the rise. Now, here's what typically happens in the post-bubble world, is that gold's real price goes up, and gold miners make more money. Never mind what the dollar's going to do, because if you go back to 1929, 1930, in there, Homestake was the premier producer. And the price of gold was fixed at $20.67 an ounce. But because their costs went up in 1929, their earnings went down. And then, say, 1930-31, the real price started to turn up. So if you take this to the end of 1932, it was March 1933 when Roosevelt started fooling around with gold. Well, you had their earnings up by about 130%, and you had the stock up by 130% with no change in the gold price. It was still $20.67 an ounce. But, of course, then when you get into the mid-1930s, when Roosevelt then got on the bandwagon and changed the price of gold up, that made it even better. So here's some prices. A Homestake, in 1931, you could have bought it for $9 a share. And then in the mid-1930s, it was up to $65 a share. And beyond that, in those days, gold miners paid out everything by way of dividend. So you're getting $4 a share dividend on a $9 purchase. Hey, that shows that in a post-bubble deflation, gold mining becomes extremely profitable. So that's why we're recommending one should have on the lows. One should, well, since October, we've been advising accumulate gold stocks, and this sector will do well. Now, if sometime out there next year there's another massive hit to the S&P, well, the gold stocks will get hit as well. But generally, on a steady S&P or even a rising S&P, the gold stocks will outperform the S&P. So let's put yourself in the seat of a guy who is an aggressive equity fund manager. And he sees two quarters with the GDXJ, say, outperforming the S&P. He's got to own it. So this is where the rise in gold prices and gold stocks and outperforming the S&P is going to bring in fund managers into the game who otherwise wouldn't get in. So very positive outlook on the gold sector, on weakening deflationary pressures.
We'll take a look at some of the headlines that caught Bob's eye when we return.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Bob Hoy. Some of the headlines that caught your eye. U.S. economy grew a blistering 5.2% in third quarter. The official number from the government was 5.6%. Meanwhile, in Canada, Stats Canada says our economy contracted 1.1% in the third quarter. What's the story here, Bob?
I think, and what I've been saying for months now, is that the COVID lockdown was exceptional, and it trashed the markets then, and then now people are getting back to normal. So here's the contrast. As I mentioned, in March, the yield curve signaled a recession. Now that's some time ahead, but and underneath it, you've had everybody trying to get back to normal. Well, maybe this latest very good GDP number is they're all back to normal now, in which case you want to look at the threat from the yield curve inversion and what the stock markets are doing. And so I'm content that we're heading into a post-bubble contraction with a bear market.
Headline, Enron all over again. Wind and solar industries become total financial train wrecks.
I love that one. Yeah. Yeah, wind and solar, forget about it. It's too intermittent. And the whole game is energy density. And the most dense form of energy, of course, is nuclear. And then you got your fossil fuels like coal, oil, natural gas is a great one. But, you know, in all these windmills and power stuff, they expend more energy mining the stuff, manufacturing stuff, and building the stuff than you can ever get out of it. What's a windmill lifespan? They say 20 years, but they've been going about 15 years. So it's a very simple formula. You want to get more energy out of the system you build than the energy it takes to build it. It's simple, straightforward. So, and then even going on these days about hydrogen, oh, Lordy, that one, there's no density there whatsoever. It's very difficult to constrain. And even if you have a tank made of the best steel, the hydrogen interacts with the steel, so forget about hydrogen. And then, of course, as I said, battery cars, they're just hopeless. I mean, but the best thing is that the public's beginning to figure it out. And even some, like a head of Ford or something a while ago said, that, hey, maybe this doesn't work so well. So it's going to be a period of discovery.
From the Toronto Sun, Justin Trudeau driving Canada off a fiscal cliff.
Oh, yeah. He has absolutely no regard for finance. He's a one-way guy, and he represents the World Economic Forum to Canada. He's not Prime Minister of Canada. He is there as an emissary of the WEF. And this is where when you see debate in the House of Commons, where the issues are cost of living, on shortage, all that sort of stuff. And for a long time, Trudeau's response is, well, we have to raise the carbon tax to save the planet. And he's programmed for that. He can't say anything else. The guy's an automaton. And but the public's realizing it. He is now extremely unpopular. And at some point, the hitherto strong, Liberal Party of Canada will have to move to protect the party. So somewhere, and I don't know where, Trudeau is going to have to be eased out.
Gold bars and Tokyo apartments. How money is flowing out of China?
Yeah, I guess that's one way of getting it out.
Well, remember when Japan in the 80s was considered to be the next big thing to take over the world? And then, boom. And they've never come back from that.
No, that was that magnificent boom peaked. I think it was the Nikkei peaked on the last trading day of 1979.
Bank of Japan's paper loss on bond holdings balloons to a record $71 billion. They're still not doing great, right?
Well, most of the senior central banks bought the story and bought the bonds, and they've taken huge losses so far, and they've still got huge positions, and they will take even bigger losses yet. So we're going to go into a condition where the central bank can't depreciate its own currency. I mean, let's face it, Jim, it'll be like a pub with no beer.
Headline from Reuters, Beijing Bourse tells major shareholders to refrain from selling.
Oh, yeah. Naive bureaucrats don't want to see the stock market going down anymore, so they encourage people not to sell. That itself, for any trader, is a reason to sell when the authorities are telling you not to sell.
Hong Kong cash demand sends local bank rate to 16-year high.
Oh, yeah. Now, that's a telltale, that one. The offside speculators have got to raise short-term funds somehow, and as the headline says, up to the highest in 16 years. It's incredible, yeah.
Is that because people don't trust the banks and they want to hold on to that money themselves?
No. Speculators, desperate for funds, bidding up funds, trying to get them whatever possible. So,
Australia.
It's part of the inverted yield curve thing.
Oh, yeah.
Short rates going up faster than longs.
Australia to introduce legislation to overhaul central bank. Crikey.
Yeah. A little hint about reform. What their reform is going to be, who knows? But I like the headline.
Do central banks need to be overhauled?
They need to be reformed. And the only way to reform them is put them on a gold standard where they have gold convertibility. Then you have at least that amount of discipline in. It'll help prevent them from depreciating currency.
Beijing launches investigation into troubled wealth manager Zhang Ji.
Jim, we got a new name in China to follow. What was the one? Country Gardens and...
Country Garden and...
can't remember.
Here we are. We're going blank here.
Yeah. Anyways, here's another name that we probably will see headlines on from time to time.
And it's all because they built all those giant empty cities that nobody moved into.
Yeah. And then the state built empty roads and empty bridges and, oh, God, everything. It's just incredible there. They built one city that the downtown part was a replica of downtown Paris. I read about that.
Well,
and it's empty.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, I heard one of the reasons why those empty cities failed is they didn't build institutes of higher learning, universities, colleges.
Oh, yeah.
Right, well. And education is very important to Chinese people, important to everybody.
Oh, yeah.
So where do you go after high school? Well, in those cities, nowhere.
Yep.
I guess you can sit there in, you know, in your apartment in a building that's completely empty and watch the walls crumble.
That's what it's going to be about, yeah.
There we go. What happens if China's economy gets worse, Bob? Do they decide to distract people from lost jobs and low prospects by launching an attack on Taiwan?
Yeah, oftentimes the distraction is going to war. But I think that the whole reform movement, it's been... for the last, 80, 90 years, it's been war funded by inflation, and folks have had enough. And the previous example ran through the 1500s, and then the reform movement is best followed in England in the early 1600s. So each of these, I've called them tyrannical centuries, have run for a little over 100 years, and this one started in the early 1900s, and it's replicated the two previous ones, and this thing is running out. People have had enough war and inflation, and any time a country declares war on yet another country, they fund it with inflation, which then transfers the war to folks at home, and people had enough, and it's going to change. It's going to be very exciting to watch, Jim.
Yes, the second largest real estate company in China, Evergrande.
And that was
and
the one, yeah.
Their bankruptcy filings.
Well, we talked about Evergrande for a long time, but now we got a new one. No, we should go back to Evergrande, because this current new one, I can't say the word.
Oh. Yeah, that's... that's a,
I can't pronounce it.
Well, yeah, when one starts to go down, we're back to Cicero's quotes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, trouble in the provinces, sooner or later it ends up in the capital.
Oh, yeah. 2,000 years ago, in the eastern provinces, Phoenicia, great, and the Mediterranean then was a great trading on the sea. The the cost of moving goods via boat has always been very cheap. So the whole Mediterranean basin essentially was prosperous with free trade. And then you had the problem, as Cicero pointed out, that if you've got a financial problem in the provinces, it'll eventually hit Rome, which this is what's happening. Because, China's problems are really well advanced. And the problems are heading to New York. And when it hits, it'll be let's use the term disaster.
Bob, always a pleasure chatting with you.
Jim, good to be with you, and let's look forward to next week.
My guest has been market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. If you have any questions for Bob or for any of our other guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. We'll answer those questions for you. Find us on X at House Street. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com Radio is a production of How Street Media Incorporated.